At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Alan Norris, President and Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us today for Brookfield Residential's first quarter conference call. On the call today, I'll provide some comments about the current market conditions, and we'll highlight some of our accomplishments during this quarter and provide our outlook going forward. With me today is Craig Laurie, our Chief Financial Officer, and Thomas Louie, our Corporate Controller, who will also discuss some of our financial and operational results. I'll apologize in advance. Craig's suffering a little bit from some laryngitis, but Thomas will go through the financial, and we will all answer questions at the end. I would at this time remind you that in responding to questions and in talking about new initiatives and our financial and operating performance, we will be making forward-looking statements. These statements are subject to known and unknown risks, and future results may differ materially. For further information, I would encourage investors to review the corporate profile on our website. Our results for the first quarter of 2013 improved over the same period last year, and with the recovering U.S. housing market, we expect performance to continue to improve throughout the balance of the year. 2013 operational guidance was provided in yesterday's press release. As most of you are aware, the nature and operating cycle of our business generally lends itself to the highest proportion of the year's net income arising toward the end of the fiscal year. For the 3 months ended March 31, 2013, net income attributable to Brookfield Residential was $4 million compared to $1 million for the same quarter of the prior year. Year-over-year comparisons for the quarter show that total revenue and gross margin increased $39 million and $12 million respectively. These increases are primarily the result of greater activity in both our land and housing operations. Our Canadian markets of Alberta and Ontario continue to perform at levels consistent with previous years. While there is a degree of concern about the differential in oil and gas pricing due to pipeline and transportation constraints, Alberta still leads the way with the lowest unemployment rates in Canada. In the U.S., the housing recovery appears to be in full swing. Pent-up demand seeking finished lots and homes that are in short supply has seen house price increases. We continue to see builders, both national and regional, working to source their future lot supply to meet this increased demand. As house prices increase, there is significant lift in the underlying finished lot value, which is extremely positive for our company. In many of our markets, a 10% increase in house prices may translate into a 20 to 30% increase in the underlying value of finished lots. We continue to add to our land inventory during the first quarter with $117 million of acquisitions, approximately 54% of in Canada, 46% in the United States. Subsequent to the quarter end, we made a strategic investment in Phoenix, Arizona, via a 50-50 joint venture with an affiliate of DMB Associates for the community of Eastmark, a large mixed-use project in the top growth area of the Phoenix metro area, which is over 2,200 acres remaining to be developed. We believe that the combination of our experience in large mixed-use developments throughout North America, combined with DMB's talented management team, will add significant value to this asset going forward. Moving forward, we anticipate a much improved U.S. housing market in the year ahead and a generally stable Canadian market. This coming year, we anticipate that our Canadian operations will benefit from our strong market share within the energy-focused Alberta market and will continue to be a strong contributor to our results. We will also see a meaningful improvement in the U.S. as that market continues to recover. As momentum in the U.S. accelerates and house prices increase, we expect our land assets will continue to appreciate in value. Based on our current land holdings and recent price increases, we are optimistic about our increasing profitability continuing in 2014 and beyond. By 2015, we hope to see results in the U.S. approach profitability levels currently seen in Canada, assuming the ongoing market recovery. I'll now pass it over to Thomas, who's actually going to run through the financial component, and then we'll do some Q&A at the end.
Thank you, Alan, and good morning, everyone. Our results in the first quarter improved over the same period last year. Downstated net income attributable to Brookfield Residential for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013, was $4 million, or 4 cents per share, compared to $1 million, or 1 cent per share, for the 3 months ended March 31, 2012. The increase of $3 million is primarily a result of increased gross margin from increased operations in both our land and housing operations. This was partially offset by higher sales, marketing, general, and administrative costs. Total land revenue was $52 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013. This is an increase of $8 million and is due to 80 more lot closings compared to the same period in 2012. Land gross margin was $28 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013. This is a $4 million increase compared to the 3 months ended March 31, 2012. Our Canadian segment showed strong land activity for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013, with an increase of 59 lots compared to the same period in the prior year. Revenue for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013 was $48 million, and gross margin was $29 million, an increase of $7 million and $4 million, respectively, when compared to the same period in the prior year. The increase in revenue was a result of higher lot closings, while the 7% decrease in the average selling price resulted in a lesser increase in gross margin. The decrease in average selling price was due to a higher number of lot sales in our Edmonton market, where lot prices and gross margins are typically lower. The Central and Eastern U.S. segment continues to show signs of recovery with an increase of 21 lot closings for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013 when compared to the same period in 2012. Revenue increased by $1 million while the gross margin remained stable. This is due to the increase in Denver and Austin lot sales, partially offset by the decrease in average lot selling price related to the mix of lots sold. In terms of our housing operations, active housing communities increased to 35, up from 31 in the first quarter of 2012. Housing revenue was $119 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013, compared to $88 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2012. Gross margin was 19% in the first quarter, compared to 17% in the first quarter of 2012, an increase of $8 million. The average home selling price for Brookview Residential also increased from $351,000 in the first quarter of 2012 to $406,000 in the first quarter of 2013. Our California segment had strong sales activity with $42 million of housing revenue for the three-month period ended March 31, 2013, an increase of $29 million when compared to the same period in 2012. The increase in revenue is due to an increase of 41 home closings for the three-month period ended March 31, 2013, compared to the same period in 2012. Gross margin increased $7 million, also as a result of the increase in the home closings and a 44% increase in the average home selling price. This was primarily driven by the 29 home closings from the Bay Area, compared to the no home closings in the same period in 2012, as the homes we sell in the Bay Area have a higher average selling price when compared to other areas within California. The Central and Eastern U.S. segment continued to show increased activity, particularly in the Washington, D.C. market, which we had an increase in home closings, revenue, and gross margin for the three-month period ended March 31, 2013. New home orders totaled 675 during the first quarter of 2013, compared to 492 home orders for the same period in 2012, with much of the increase occurring with our U.S. operations. At the quarter ended March 31, 2013, the company's backlog of homes sold but not delivered, including our share of unconsolidated entities, was 1,213 with a sales value of $535 million, compared to 890 homes with a value of $374 million at the quarter ended March 31, 2012. Moving to our balance sheet, as of March 31, 2013, our assets totaled $2.9 billion, which was an increase of about $70 million compared to December 31, 2012. Our land and housing inventory and investments in unconsolidated entities are our most significant assets, with a combined book value of $2.5 billion, or approximately 87% of our total assets. The land and housing assets increased $102 million from December 31, 2012, due to acquisitions of $117 million, development activity, and stronger backlog, partially offset by sales activity during the period. Our project-specific and other financing debt increased to $603 million as of March 31, 2013, from $459 million at December 31, 2012, with the acquisitions described and development spending. Excluding any material acquisitions that may occur, this debt balance tends to reduce as the year progresses and closings increase. Thank you for joining us in our quarter-end conference call. I'll now turn the call back to the operator who will moderate questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Will Rando of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my question. I guess my first question is in regards to your supplementary financial data. Particularly, you disclosed that basically the undiscounted cash flow in your land held for development is at $5 billion. Have you recently marked that to market, or how should we think about that?
We haven't recently marked it to market. The number is fairly consistent from what we had disclosed before, Will. I mean, the market's moving fairly quickly at this point, but we have not gone back and reevaluated future cash flows for all of the long-term lands at this point.
Thanks for that. And just a follow-up question in regards to some of the guidance you provided. I guess first and foremost, can you give us a sense for average selling prices for the lots and homes? And also, how should we think about, call it the financial results of this new joint venture in Phoenix?
Craig, did you want to touch on the average selling prices? I mean, they're probably in the supplemental. I don't have them at my fingertips.
Sure.
I meant in regards to the guidance you provided for the full year for average selling prices.
Sorry.
Hey, well, this is Craig. I apologize for my voice.
Hey.
You know, we haven't given actual guidance in terms of what the average expected selling price would be. You know, we obviously, as you mentioned, we do disclose what we've achieved to date on page 10 and 11 of the interim, and it's also in the corporate profile. Obviously, our expectation would be, it'd probably be rough, obviously within Canada, I'd say it's probably roughly the same as what we've been experiencing. In the U.S., I think it'd be roughly the same with two variables to it. Obviously, as we've talked about, more homes we sell in the Bay Area raises the average. And then as Alan mentioned, you know, given the strong market conditions, we have been experiencing increasing prices as we move forward.
And then thanks for that. How should we think about basically how this new JV in Phoenix hits results? What's kind of the timeline on that, and how should we frame that?
I'll touch on that just now, Will. I mean, we just bought into the project. It's an active project that's underway. So they sold, before us joining the joint becoming a joint venture partner, they had sold just over 700 single-family lots last year. So many of those lots are now just about to start development, and those builders that bought the lots will be selling. So there's already some – it's unlikely there would be any more coming this year, albeit it's possible depending on the rate of absorption. So because we would not be selling any more immediately, but we'll be working with them. I mean, the key thing is in this one, there's a minimum of 5,500 future single-family lots and anywhere up to 6 to 9 million square feet of other non-residential uses in this large mixed-use project. So it is a long-term play, and we'll be working with DMB, our partner, to try and maximize and really take advantage of what we think is a superior location in the Phoenix metro area. So it's we're very positive on it. I mean, the market has moved significantly. We've been working on this transaction with DMB for a number of months, and we think we're still in an entry point that allows us a good upside from this point on.
Hey, thanks for that, and some great progress.
Yeah.
The next question is from Adam Rudiger of Wells Fargo Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I might be a bit of a broken record here asking Will's question, but I'm going to ask it a little bit differently in terms of the guidance for the lot sales this year. It's pretty flat on a volume basis, and Alan, going back to your comments, which you've made I think several times about a 10% increase in home prices translating into a 20 to 30% increase in land prices. I mean, certainly it wouldn't be unreasonable based upon what we've heard this week from other builders, you know, for 10% price increases in many of your markets. So, you know, would it be safe to assume that we could think about a, you know, 20 to 30% higher sales price on those lot sales and then a, you know, higher gross margin as well?
Yeah, I would say in some of the if we were selling lots up in Northern California, without question, we're probably not selling any up there at this point, Adam. In Southern California, we've definitely seen some of those price increases. I mean, some examples, just anecdotally, would be that, as we touched on in prior conference calls, we were looking at lot pricing, say, in Southwest Riverside, et cetera, somewhere in that 75 to 80,000. We sold some last year at 85, and I would say those same lots today are probably 120 to 125. So there is no question that what we said in the past is now translating into reality. How many of those lots will specifically say? I mean, the market is moving very quickly. I'm not saying we're going to necessarily not sell them, but we will only sell some because the market's moving so quickly that we think we have some significant more upside on many of those lots, and we're not going to be blowing them out. Let's put it that way. We will be matching lot sales with what we think underlying absorption is and not loading up builders so that they can take that upside. So we'll be matching up with where we think the underlying absorption is to the consumer.
Okay, thank you. And then just on your comments on 2015, hoping that the U.S. can match the profitability levels of Canada, are you talking about margins or net income dollars, or what does that mean, matching profitability?
I would say it's on the net income dollars, margins. Each market's a little bit different with respect to percentage margin, as you well know. I mean, Calgary has obviously have very strong margins there. But I would say that overall, we've been looking to approach close to current levels of profitability in Canada with, on a segmented basis. If you look on a segmented information, that's where we'd be like to try and get our U.S. operation to within a couple of years. That's the goal.
Okay. And then a similar question that Will asked about Arizona. What about the California deal you did in Oakley? When should that start impacting you?
We hope to be in their grading later this year. There's an outside chance that lot sales are starting building later this year, more likely Q1 2014.
Great. Thank you.
The next question is from Alex Avery of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. With your operational guidance that you provided for lots and home sales, I was just hoping you could frame that for us in terms of how that fits into what you can, as an organization, deliver to the market. I mean, is that sort of peak output, or is there a lot more that you can push in terms of how much volume you could do if you wanted to? I mean, are you guys in flat-out harvest mode in terms of, producing and selling, or are you holding back? And then, I guess, secondly, how does that compare to what the market demand would be? If you wanted to, could you do 6,000 combined lots and homes next year or this year?
Yeah, morning, Alex. We've got more room in the gas tank. There's more room to go without question. I mean, we're going to be up about 300 homes in the U.S., we've got way more capacity than that as we go forward. There's no question. We're not trying to – I mean, right now, just as we gear up, we're definitely trying to match production and sales and not get too far ahead because of the significant volatility in the marketplace. So we are trying to match it up so we don't get too much ahead of ourselves. We are seeing some cost pressures on the cost side, as well as obviously pick up on the revenue side. But, I mean, the U.S. operation's got capacity to do a lot more, but it's not going to happen overnight. It will happen gradually, and we just need to gear up appropriately to do that. I mean, we'll be up 300 home sales this year, for instance. We could be up, another 300 easily next year within the capacity and the communities we have. We will be opening it close to 13 or 14 new communities this year, and so we will see a significant pick up just from a closings perspective. Most of the financial impact of those new communities will not be felt in 2013. Most of them, the closings from that will result in 14 and beyond. So we got room to go. We're not concerned about that.
And so, in the scenario that the market is there for significantly more, is your thinking that you just continue to, keep pace with the market, or are you in sort of a hold back and let prices rise, or conversely try and get as much done as possible?
It depends on each market, to be quite honest. I mean, if we think prices are continuing to increase, we're obviously going to be very selective. We're not going to just not sell into it. We have to still create momentum in the various communities, but we're not going to get ahead of the underlying demand from the consumer. In areas where we think it might be a little bit more mature, then we would look to be doing something differently, or maybe repositioning some stuff. I mean, in the Toronto market, we think things have flattened out a little bit there, so we're obviously in a different mode there than we would say in Southwest Riverside or Northern California. Each one's
okay.
A little bit different depending on the metrics. So, I mean, we look at everything from the point of view of where we think, just to try and make sure we feed the communities at the right time, we sell, we try and match up with underlying demand. If somebody has a different view of the future that we think is more attractive from their point of view than what we see, then we would obviously we would move to reposition and sell that asset.
Okay. And then if you could just provide, I guess, a little bit of background how the deal came together in Phoenix. Is that a market that you've been looking at for, you know, some time as an attractive market, or was it more deal specific? How did you end up in that deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've looked at Phoenix and we'd spent a lot of time looking at that market. I mean, I would say that DMB, our partner down there, is probably one of the most respected development companies in that market area, and we had entertained some discussions with them some time ago on a number of different fronts, and we ended up realizing that we shared a lot of common vision and culture with respect to how to do master plan development and the mixed-use aspect, which we think we can bring significant experience to that side of things, and we ended up in a venture together. It's a very good structure, and I think we're very, very well aligned between our two organizations. So we're looking forward to that. We will continue to look at opportunities in the Phoenix area, not just on a 50-50 basis, but on a wholly owned basis as well.
And as far as the profile of that project, is there, you know, a good chunk of it that you think is just going to be a continuation of the activity that you said they'd already achieved there, or is there a portion of that that might be 15 or 20 years out?
There's about 600 acres of the 2,200 acres remaining, Alex, that are non-residential. This project is the old GM Proving Grounds down in the Mesa. It's right across the highway from the Mesa Gateway Airport, which is the feeder airport for Sky Harbor in Phoenix. And there are more airlines going there. We believe that the future for this area is quite significant for non-residential uses, whether it be office, retail, and other uses. So we really want to make sure that we take advantage. And I'm not saying we're not going to just sell lots. I mean, we will sell lots into the marketplace, but the entitlements on this land have significant upside, more so than what we underwrote it at, to be quite blunt. We think there is some good upside on this if we can find the right mix of product, both in an intensification side as well as the non-residential uses. So we're very excited about it.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Stefan Mikituk of Pike Place Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. A couple questions. First off, in terms of the lot sale guidance, in the U.S. you're saying about 900 lots, right? And last year I think you did around 750 in the U.S. Does that sound right? The 750, though, that included those lot sales in Playa Vista in the fourth quarter, correct?
Did they? Yes.
Yeah, which was, so it was like like 263 or something like that?
Yeah.
Right. So those were at.
Oh, sorry.
The number
was 195. Correct.
I'm sorry, 195. So last year's 752 included 195 that were essentially at no margin.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. So because the 900 doesn't look like a big increase over 750, but it really is over. You know, call it 550 or 555, since
that's
those Playa Vista didn't. I'm sorry.
That's correct.
Right.
That's
right.
Correct.
Okay. Right. Right. Okay. I wanted to make sure I had that right in my head. And that it, you know, we can play with our assumptions in terms of what happens with lot pricing this year. But it's, I would think the impact on the gross profit's probably going to be much more dramatic than we'd think.
Again,
comparing 750 to 900. Right?
Yes, I think that's fair, albeit the mix, depending on the region. I mean, the market is, the recovery is coming fairly significantly across the country, but each region still has I would say, as hot spots. I mean, the Bay Area has been going very hot for a while, as we all know. Southern Cal is now picking up and getting closer to those sort of levels in different spots. It's
right.
happening in Denver, but in a much more relaxed fashion, if you want to put it that way. So you won't see as much of a price increase there as we are seeing in some of the other areas. And D.C. in some of the areas, it's happening, but again, depending on the rings and the assets. But we're confident that the price pressure is still coming in those other areas and will translate through the balance of the year through increased prices and continue to increase as supply is constrained and demand continues.
Okay. All right. Got it. And then in terms of, back to the comment you made about by 2015, you think the U.S. will be as profitable as Canada. If I'm looking at the supplemental, right, U.S. was basically break even in Q1, correct?
Yeah.
Right. And
yep.
And when you're so really, I guess maybe backing up, it's probably what you're trying to say is since Canada is not improving at that dramatic of a rate, you're probably saying in 2015, U.S. can be as profitable in dollars as perhaps Canada was for all of 2012. Is that it?
Yeah, we're saying that we think as the U.S. picks up momentum and prices continue to increase and assuming an ongoing market recovery, we're just trying to give some indication to on the call to our various stakeholders that we think with the various communities we're opening and with price increases that we can approach the profitability levels that are currently experienced in Canada on an overall segmented basis. That's correct. So, I mean, through volume and price and margin. But overall, on an overall basis, when you look at the segmented information for Canada, we would for 2012, we would hope to be approaching those levels by 2015 in the U.S. We're just trying to give some slightly longer-term guidance for people that, you know, as we see the market unfolding. Whether we're right or wrong will remain to be seen, but we're feeling confident at this point.
Right, right. But that, I mean, that essentially implies a doubling of the profitability is...
That's what it would imply.
Yeah, okay. Okay, hey, and just in terms of the SG&A, I know it was up quite a bit. You know, looking at the supplemental, it seems like some of that was non-cash stock comp, but the bulk of it was really just relating to higher profitability levels. Is it just kind of linear to sales at this point? And is it? I mean, I would think a lot of that's changes in the U.S. Then.
On this, Craig. As you mentioned, on page 16, we do break out SG&A. As you mentioned, the stock comp is going to depend on stock price, so maybe exclude that for now. Sales and marketing is going to be tied to our revenue. And then, as you said, G&A does have a component of activity. I think our current expectations would be for the next couple of quarters for the actual G&A piece to be relatively consistent within the first quarter. But then, obviously, in the fourth quarter, we would expect an increase, as we did have in 2012 as well.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan.
As a reminder, anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from Andrew Berg of Post Advisory Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just to follow up on the last question, when you say consistent SG&A, you're talking on a dollar amount, correct?
Andrew, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Does the improvement you're seeing in the U.S. housing market in any way alter the timetable you have for Playa Vista, or does that continue to be sort of a farther-out project?
Sorry, could you repeat that, Andrew?
Given the improvement you're seeing in the U.S. market, does that in any way alter the timing for when you would become more active with Playa Vista?
I mean, obviously, it's the lots that we sold last year, the builders will be under construction this year, and really depending on the rate of absorption that they experience would determine when we bring on the other 500-plus lots that we have left over in Playa. We also have, some retail assets there as well and some other ancillary assets, but a lot depends on the other 500 lots. It will depend on the pace of absorption for the existing ones so that we don't go in and cannibalize that particular thing. But we have seen good price appreciation since we did that acquisition back in the fall of last year, without question. So we're very, very comfortable and very optimistic about that asset also.
Okay, and then housekeeping question. interest capitalized and cost of goods sold, how much was that?
Andrew, it's in, did we break it out in note two?
It's broken out in note two of the financial statements on page 41.
Okay, I'll look it up then. Thank you. I hadn't seen those yet.
The next question is from Rick Murray of Midwest Advisors. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to ask about the cancellations, which look like they ticked up a bit in the first quarter, and I was wondering if there's anything extraordinary you saw in the quarter. And as just a follow-up, if you could provide some color in terms of land prices and trends you're seeing in Canada. Thank you.
So there's Craig. In terms of cancellation, as you did mention, we do break it out within the interim report, and we can give you the page. It is on page 15. As you point out, it was really, they were consistent. They were actually down in California. The increase was in Central and Eastern, really related to D.C., and it just happened to be, it was kind of situational dependent there on a product mix. But as you say, I wouldn't say that we would expect it to particularly increase. I think it was just kind of a particular situation.
Well, I guess I was inquiring more specifically into the cancellations in Canada, which looked like they were in the quarter almost as many as you had all of last year. I was just curious if there was something extraordinary that was going on.
Not aware of anything there at all. I don't think it's anything to be alarmed about. So, no. Did you want to ask questions, sorry, secondly, on the pricing in Canada?
Yeah, just in terms of trends you're seeing there in terms of home prices and land prices.
Yeah, I would say that, taking Ontario first, I would say that it's been a fairly soft landing with the slowdown in the high-rise business in Ontario. I would think that we've had reasonable price increases in the Ontario market up until probably the end of Q3 last year. I would say that low-rise product is now flattening out somewhat from a house price perspective in Toronto. In the Alberta market, we've probably pushed in the last 6 months, house prices have gone up, depending on the product, anywhere between $2,000 and $12,000 a door. In the Alberta market, it's a fairly tight marketplace. There's still some constraints on supply in there, and we have seen good in-migration into the province. So it's not off the scale by any stretch, but we have seen modest improvements in pricing in that marketplace. On the land side, small increases on the when we're selling finished lots, and we will start to see a little bit of cost pressure up in Alberta as well, just on the trade side. But we're all obviously impacted by things like lumber, you know, across the board, obviously across all of North America. Anything else, Rick?
Oh, no, thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. There are no more questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to Alan Norris for any closing comments.
Thank you. So thanks once again for joining us today, and I shall look forward to meeting with many of you over the next between now and the next earnings call in August, as Craig and I will both be speaking at a number of industry conferences over the next several months. So please reach out at any point in time if we're in. We'll try and reach out to you as well if we're coming your way, or you're going to be attending those conferences, and we'll try and do some more detailed conversations. So thanks once again for joining us today.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.